All right, the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee will come to order. Everybody will take their seats. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon.
Here.
Vice Chair Roach.
Present.
Ranking Member Grieco.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran.
Here.
Lusada Cabrera.
Here.
Bush.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Chambliss.
Here.
Fetterhoff. Gregory.
Here.
Haig.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. As always, please remember to silence your cell phones. And a reminder, please turn your microphones on when you're speaking, especially those that approach the podium, and turn it off when you're not speaking. Today we have, about 9 or 10 bills to hear. I will make this announcement. If you are here for PCS for HB 379, that's lewd or lascivious molestation by Representative Cheney, we will not be taking up that bill today. We're going to temporarily postpone that. So if you're here for PCS for HB 379, lewd or lascivious molestation by Rep. Cheney, we will not be hearing that bill. I don't want you to sit here and you could be doing something else because it's not going to come up. We will move to our first bill, and that is HB 1435, Code and Traffic Enforcement by Rep. Leak. You're recognized to present HB 1435.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member, members. This bill is a bill that deals with the speed at which pop-up events and invasions are being organized in our communities and the fact that they are able to organize and come together faster than local government or law enforcement are able to react. Frequently, these unpermitted events bring large crowds and unlawful behavior, shutting down streets and disrupting family neighborhoods. This bill allows for the sheriff or chief administrative officer of a county or municipality to designate an area as a special event zone in response to a special event, defined as an unpermitted activity or event organized or promoted via social media platform, which is attended by 50 or more persons and substantially increases or disrupts the normal flow of traffic on a roadway, street, or highway. The bill doubles the statutory fine for any non-criminal traffic infraction that occurs within a special event zone, allows a law enforcement officer to impound a vehicle for up to 72 hours for any criminal traffic violation or non-criminal traffic infraction that occurs in a special event zone, authorize a law enforcement officer to enforce occupancy limits in special event zones, and provides for recovery of costs associated with designating and enforcing a special event zone from the organizer or promoter of the special event. The bill also prohibits excessive noise that emanates from a motor vehicle and corrects a prior state law that was found to be unconstitutional. This fixes the problem that the Supreme Court had in it. And Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Thank you, Chair Leak, for that presentation. Are there any questions on the bill? Representative Lerner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for the bill. I wanted to, you know, we heard House Bill 1 here last committee with the anti-protest or the riot bill that we heard last year. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of explain the difference between what those protests are versus what these demonstrations are, and just help me understand that dynamic if you can.
Yeah, last year, Lee.
Thank you. They're unrelated entirely. This is not about protest or demonstrations. And frequently what's happening, and I'll use an example in my community. On social media, somebody decides that we're going to get all of the pickup truck community to come into Daytona Beach, take over the beachside, shut down the traffic, shut down the roads, going to be there for 6 hours, and then they roll out of town. Right? It's not a demonstration. It's not politically motivated in any way. It's not a protest. It's just a way to shut down and take over the beach and have a big party.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I think my question is mainly about that intent, right? So I guess if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, if a demonstration, if a gathering has a political or a First Amendment objective, that would fall under one category. And if it doesn't have that as the objective, then this new rule would apply. Is that the intent here?
Recognize.
Thank you. Yeah, the intent here is not to infringe in any way on political protest or demonstrations. And I'll also let you know that frequently, and as is outlined in the staff analysis here, these pop up via social media, And so you can tell when the event has a political bent to it, or is just an opportunity to get, you know, a bunch of trucks together and have a good time.
Any other questions? Questions? Okay. I don't see any amendments on the bill. We're now in a public testimony. We have one appearance card. Jeffrey Branch, Florida League of Cities, waves in support. Okay, anybody else? See no one? We're now in debate, members. Debate. Anybody wishing to debate on the bill? Okay. Representative Leak, Chair Leak, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I'll wave close.
Thank you, sir. Chair Leak, having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1435 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Luisada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
No.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
16 yeas, one nay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 1435 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Members, if you will indulge me, I have a bill to present in another committee. You know how that always works out. So at this time, I'm going to be asking Chair Roach to assume the chairmanship of the committee until I return. Thank you.
Okay. The next bill for consideration today is House Bill 1513, Public Records Autopsy Reports of Child Victims of Domestic Violence, by Representative Clemens. Representative Clemens, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and there is an amendment on this bill. If I may, Mr. Chair, I will proceed to explain the bill, and then we will present the amendment that meets with your approval.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions on the bill?
All right. Let me start by saying I hope and I pray that no member of this committee or members of your family ever have to experience the trauma that this family experienced last May the 4th. Because you see, on May the 4th of 2021, Rex Reinhold, age 14, and Brody Reinhold, his brother, younger brother, age 11, were murdered by their father. They were murdered by their father, and then he proceeded to set the home on fire, where then he proceeded to commit suicide. The boy's mother, Mindy Reinhart, her desire was to never, ever, ever learn the gory details surrounding the murder of her two little boys. Now, notwithstanding Mindy's objections, the medical examiner released Rex and Brody's autopsy reports to the press, citing the Florida Broad Public Records laws, which described the location and the number of gunshot wounds those precious little boys suffered. News outlets from around the country, you know the adage, if it bleeds, it leads. They were quick to jump on this, and they ran story after story about the release of the medical examiner's report, some of which include very descriptive details about how those two young, innocent boys were murdered. According to the medical examiner, and I quote, Brody suffered gunshot wounds, 4, in the head, the neck, the hands, the chest, the arms. Rex was shot in the head and the back of his neck, and soot from the fire was found in and on around his body and clothing. That comes from the television. Mindy was unable, the grieving mother, was unable to avoid this news. Given the extensive media coverage and dozens of individuals who saw it on the media, reached out to her when these horrific details became public. In addition to Mindy and her family, get this, the minor classmates, the elementary and middle school classmates of Rex and Brody, other friends were also exposed to these graphic
information of exactly how their friends were murdered. Now, due to such sensitive and illustrative information being widely available to the public, Mindy was stripped of her parental right to not know the details of how her two young boys were murdered. Now, this legislation that you have before you today, ladies and gentlemen, will create a public records exemption. Normally, I'm against those. I am not in this case. It will create an exemption for the autopsy reports of minor children whose deaths were as a result of domestic violence. Now, the language has provisions for an exception for a surviving parent to retain the parental right to view and copy the report, provided they were not the parents that caused the injury or death to the children. This bill would also provide a surviving parent who was not the offender to give reasonable notice of any petition filed with the court to review and copy the medical examiner's report, as well to be provided the opportunity to be present and heard at that related hearing. This bill will sunset on October the 2nd, 2027, unless it's saved through reenactment of the legislature seated at that time. This bill provides legislative findings and an effective date upon becoming law. Mr. Chairman, that is the totality of the bill presented to you today.
Thank you, Representative. Members, we're now in questions. Any questions on the bill? Rep. Learned, you are recognized in questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for the bill. I have two questions, and I'll come back to the chair for the second one. The first question is just I understand why we're doing this in the instance of minors. I guess the question is, why make it specific to domestic violence? Like, if a parent doesn't want this information in public and something horrific happened to a child from a school shooting or something else, right? Like, why so narrow?
Mr. Chairman,
you recognize.
The best way I could probably take a stab at that, Representative Learned, is we were trying to, look, the Florida has a broad public records law we're very proud of. Other states have modeled their laws after us. We were not trying to make a gaping hole in that great public records law. What we were trying to do is narrowly define the scope, and it was brought to bear by this terrible tragedy, so that we're not opening it up for consternation from our colleagues who bear the First Amendment always. What we're trying to do is just protect the families of this sort of domestic violence, and that's such a narrow scope. We feel strongly that the legislature will pass this, and if there's other applicability for this, we certainly are open to listening to that. It does have three committee stops.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And last question. I just wanted to ask, if it's the parents' intent to make the information public, is there anything in the bill that prevents them from being able to do it? I understand that this is making a public records exemption so that the state isn't making the information public, but if the parent wanted it to be out there, could they do that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the answer is in the affirmative. I believe it does shield this particular narrow scope of public records based upon if they are the surviving parent that had nothing to do with the cause of death or the other criminal element associated with that. So the answer that I see is yes.
Thank you. Any other members and questions? Seeing no further questions, we'll move on to amendments. I do see that we have one amendment filed by Representative Gregory. Representative Gregory, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank the representative for carrying this important bill. Working with the blessing of the sponsor of the bill, I offer the amendment that you have before you so that the act may be appropriately cited as the Rex and Brody Reinhart Act. That is the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Gregory. Questions, members? Questions on the amendment? See no questions. Public testimony on the amendment? We have appearance cards. We have no one in the audience wishing to testify on the amendment. Are there members wishing to debate on the amendment? Oh. This is on the amendment, correct?
This is on the amendment.
Okay, and what was your name, miss?
Mindy Reinhart. Right. I'm Rex and Bernie's mom. Here's pictures of them. And they were taken on May 4th, and I made it very clear to everyone, my family, media, everyone, that I did not want to know any of the details of their death. I knew that they died of gunshot wounds, and that was the extent that I wanted to know. The day that the autopsies were released, we asked the press very nicely, please do not cover this. And within hours of it being released, my cell phone started, you know, getting text, and kids that were Rex and Brody's friends, we were sitting at kitchen tables watching it on the news, seeing horrific details that they were not told or their parents did not want them to know. And this was months after, and they had already started the healing process, and now it sent so many children backwards, and it sent so many adults backwards. I found out about it by Googling, I wanted a picture of Brody, and I Googled his name. Oh, okay, okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Okay, got it. All right, thank you. Oh, my God.
Thank you, Ms. Reinhart. Okay, members, any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Rep. Chambliss, you're recognized to debate. We are on the amendment right now. Any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, Representative Gregory, you are recognized to close on the amendment. Thank you, Representative Gregory. Members, if you favor the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. By your vote, show the amendment is adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. Any public testimony on the bill? Ms. Reinhart, you are recognized.
Okay, take two. So anyway, I would just love that that if a parent like myself does not want to know the gory details of how their 11 and 14-year-old died, that they be protected. And also the youth, they were huge, avid baseball players, and they had a huge following all across the state of Florida. And now when you Google their names, those headlines come up rather than videos of them playing baseball and awards that they had won. I mean, those are there too, but you kind of have to search through those horrific headlines to get there. So, okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Reinhart. Members, we are now in debate on the bill. Representative Chambliss, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And of course, my heart goes out to the family, I definitely don't understand how you feel, but I've met so many families across the state of Florida that are parents of children that were involved in gun violence, and so I only bring this up to make the point to my colleague's question of potential other applications besides domestic violence, while it's going through its committee stops, if we could get an answer to that, I'd be very interested in that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Rep. Beltran, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for this good bill. As we all know, the purpose of public records laws is to show the workings of government. There's no public interest in hearing these type of details in this type of crime or any other type of crime, quite frankly, especially in the domestic violence context. There's no obvious connection to the workings of government, so there's no reason for this sort of thing to be in the public record. So thank you for this good bill.
Representative Learned, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll echo the points of my colleagues. I think this is a fantastic bill, but like you mentioned, Representative, you know, it's done narrowly, right? And I think there's probably a lot of grieving parents out there affected by a wide variety of other things. And I hope maybe over the summer we can work together on coming up with something for next year, too. Thank you.
Seeing no other members wishing to debate, Representative Clemens, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and colleagues, you know, it was only 22 years ago in the state of Florida at a race where 500,000 people were watching when Dale Earnhardt happened to have an unfortunate Sunday and lost his life, and thus began the frenzy that occurred in the media and in the websites about autopsies, because Florida has such broad rules to allow public records on things as private as an autopsy. And that went through the courts for several years before it was settled. A few years later, there happened to be an Anna Nicole Smith who died tragically of her own hand at the Seminole Hotel and Casino. Again, a frenzy occurred. Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, there's probably more than 6, maybe as many as 12 websites that you can go onto today that specializes in showing autopsies of tragic events just like we're talking about today. By passing this bill today, the Rex and Brody Reinhart bill, we will at least close that particular door so that those villainous people, is all I can say, will not have access to the tragedy, especially the tragedy of those young, innocent young men who will never see another baseball game. They'll never be at Christmas time again. They'll never have the opportunity to have children or vote in an election. You can help that today and help the surviving parents heal just a little bit longer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I ask all of your favorable support on this good bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clemens. Representative Clemens, having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on House Bill 1513 and announce a vote.
Representatives, Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Usada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grigo? Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brennan? 15 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show House Bill 1513 reported favorably as amended. Thank you and congratulations, Representative Clemens, and thank you to the Reinhardt family.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Okay, members will now take up proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1439, Prostitution, Lewdness, Human Trafficking, and Public Lodging by Representative Toledo. Representative Toledo, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Before you today, you have House Bill 1439, the Human Trafficking Reduction Act. This bill has components that seek to reduce demand for human trafficking, assist law enforcement, and help survivors of human trafficking. To reduce demand, the bill addresses two main issues. It increases the penalty for first-time sex buying to a felony to deter demand that fuels human trafficking. And the bill bans hourly rates at hotels, motels, and vacation rentals to eliminate places for this offensive practice to hide in plain sight. By increasing the penalty for first-time sex buying, this will encourage Johns to think twice. Even if a person is able to plead down their charges to a misdemeanor, they will still need to register on the Johns Registry. This registry, though established in 2019, has only one person on the list who has purchased sex in the state and was caught. Let's make the tools we already have in place more helpful to stop human trafficking. House Bill 1439 also establishes the Trafficking in Persons Risk to Resilience Lab at the University of South Florida, St. Pete Campus, as a statewide data repository for anonymous data on human trafficking from law enforcement, state agencies, and others. Data is key when it comes to tracking and ultimately stopping human trafficking. The TIP Lab is run by some of the most preeminent scholars in the field of human trafficking. It will provide data analysis and will further assist law enforcement around the state in efforts to monitor trends, identify hotspots, and stop and prevent trafficking. Finally, the bill also offers protections to survivors petitioning for expungement on their criminal record obtained while being trafficked by keeping their petitions confidential and preventing retaliation by traffickers and other bad actors while also maintaining their privacy as they seek safe and affordable housing and good jobs in effort to get their lives on track. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, we're now in questions. Any questions on the bill? See no questions. Are there amendments on the bill? See no amendments. Any public testimony on the bill? Do you have public testimony? Mr. Barney Bishop, Smart Justice Alliance, you are recognized. So that he waves in support. Ms. Samantha Padgett, Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Samantha Padgett. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations and General Counsel for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. I want to thank Representative Toledo for bringing this issue forward and for engaging our industry at the outset. Regarding the prohibition on hourly rentals, FRLA wholeheartedly supports this language. This is consistent with the position that we have taken as an association and as an industry to be part of the solution when it comes to preventing human trafficking in the state of Florida. We believe enacting this prohibition is on a statewide basis is good policy for Florida. The bill presently requires positive proof of identification to the operator at the time of occupancy. We have concerns about the language as it presently stands, and I appreciate the opportunity to share these concerns with the committee. Most likely, most people will see this to be a somewhat innocuous provision. We're all used to providing our ID when we go to a hotel, right? We hand her over ID with our credit card when we check in. And the associate at the front desk will take your ID, they'll compare it to the name on the credit card, and they'll also compare it to the name and information that is in their registration. And they'll hand the ID back to you, and then they'll proceed to run your credit card. However, now, in the wake of the pandemic and also just in operational ease, many of our members are moving to virtual check-in processes. This was more desirable during the pandemic because it cuts down on contact. And in the aftermath, with there being such a labor shortage, this also reduces staffing. Even for mid-level hotels, this is a growing operational trend. We're unsure if the ID requirements as it stands in this language can be crafted in such a way to allow for virtual check-in. We're concerned about the liability this creates for the property. Are we required to keep a copy of the ID? This is personally identifiable information, and we're cognizant of the desire and necessity for consumer data privacy. Additionally, what is our responsibility as the establishment for determining the validity of the ID? How is this impacted when the ID is from a foreign country, or if it's an alternative form of ID, such as a passport? Is it expected that this information or this record be turned over automatically to the police? There are some constitutional issues here that we would want to explore in more detail. We have shared our concerns about this provision with the sponsor yesterday, and we talked about it, and we committed to her that we would be discussing these issues in greater detail with our members to see if there are potential solutions, and we have already started that process. The feedback I have received thus far demonstrates that there is, as I said, a great deal of concern regarding this provision. We will continue to gather feedback from our members and communicate with Representative Toledo on this aspect. But I don't want this to take away from our support of the hourly prohibition provision. We will continue to work with the sponsor, and we appreciate her willingness to tackle this issue and yours as a committee as well. Happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the time of the committee.
Members, any questions for Ms. Padgett? See no questions, thank you. Okay, Ms. Dottie Groover Skipper, you are recognized. Anti-trafficking advocates.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Brennan and committee members. My name is Dottie Groover Skipper, and as someone who's been working in the trenches of anti-trafficking for over four decades, yes, over 40 years I've been in this work, before there was even a label attached to human trafficking. This is an insidious crime, and it is accelerating now that we have come so far in the state of Florida on this issue. And it's also very imperative that we continue to add to the great work that we have already done in the state of Florida. For years, we've been addressing human trafficking pretty much in the dark, with little viable data to truly and effectively know what dots to connect in order to decrease demand for human trafficking. to assist victims, to assist law enforcement, determine trends, and know that, you know, where this human trafficking activity is actually taking place. Supporting House Bill 1439 for creation of a statewide data repository for all human trafficking data in the state would really connect all of those dots. Florida could lead the charge for the nation. It would be a roadmap for other states to follow. In addition, supporting HB 1439 to increase penalties for first-time sex buyers from a misdemeanor to a felony is very wise. Through my 40 years of working with trauma victims of prostitution and sex trafficking, I have witnessed years of torment due to the sordid actions of other people buying and selling their bodies against their will, all while the perpetrator basically gets a slap on the wrist. We must get serious about human life in this aspect and increase penalties for this very serious crime against humanity. Hand in hand with this bill, HB 1439 would ban hourly rates at hotels, motels, and vacation rentals. This bill would help combat a business activity that encourages illegal activity, a breeding ground for prostitution, sex trafficking, and drug deals. Hourly hotels, motels, and vacation rentals are a public safety concern. They also hurt economic development opportunities in those areas. So I've asked the question to myself, what is the purpose for an establishment to operate by the hour? It's highly unlikely the rooms are being used by a family on their way to Busch Gardens, SeaWorld, or Disney. Lastly, in addition to House Bill 1439, it's House Bill 1441, which I know we're not talking about now, but since I'm here, I have just a couple of things to say. It provides confidentiality for human trafficking victims in the process of expungement of their records.
Ma'am, I'm going to have to ask you just to restrict your comments to this bill only.
Okay. Well, thank you, committee, for getting tough on crime, protecting the vulnerable, and paving the way for our great state of Florida to continue leading in anti-trafficking initiatives. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, that concludes public testimony on the bill. Excuse me, we have one more appearance card. Gary Bradford, Florida PBA, waves in support. Thank you. Thank you. Noted. Wholeheartedly, 36,000. Thank you for your support. Okay, we just have one more that just came in. Okay, we have Ms. Lauren Hartman, University of South Florida, waves in support. Thank you. Any other appearance cards? Anyone else wishing to speak on the bill? Okay, that concludes public testimony on the bill. Members, we're now moving into debate on the bill. Any members wishing to debate on the bill? Seeing none. Okay, Representative Toledo, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, members. And I want to, I am going to be working with the Restaurant Lodging Association to work on that ID provision, because ultimately what we want to do is make sure there's not anonymous people trying to go into hotel rooms and do these illicit activities and really stop human trafficking. As Florida is still number three in the country in reports of human trafficking, and as terrible as that is, we have to consider that there's many instances that happen here that go unreported. I've worked on this bill with human trafficking survivors, lawyers, activists, law enforcement researchers, and other legislators to combine the next best steps available to us as Florida legislature addresses human trafficking in a comprehensive and effective way. We want to reduce demand, deny opportunities to traffickers to use hourly rate lodging options, support law enforcement with data collection and analysis, and support survivors' efforts to rebuild their lives. And ultimately, what this bill will do is send a strong message that although we are the free state of Florida, we are closed for human trafficking.
Thank you, Representative Toledo. Strong close there. Lindsay, please call the roll. Proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1439. Announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brennan? 16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Please show House, please show PCB for HB 1439 reported favorably out of committee. And Representative Toledo, you are welcome to remain at the podium because our next bill is going to be PCS for House Bill 1441, Public Records, Human Trafficking Victim Expunction, also by Representative Toledo. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 1441 is the public records exception for the human trafficking victims expungement. The bill is linked to House Bill 1439, the Human Trafficking Reduction Act, and allows for exemption from public records of the petitions that survivors of human trafficking use to request expungement of criminal records occurred while being trafficked. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, we're in questions. Any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, are there amendments on the bill? Seeing no amendments on the bill. Is there public testimony on the bill? Do you have one card here? Mr. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. Also, Mr. Gary Bradford, Florida PBA, waves in support. Thank you. Any more appearance cards? Okay, that concludes public testimony. Members, we're moving into debate on the bill. Do we have debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Toledo, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Having waived close, Lindsay, please call the roll on PCS for House Bill 1441 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera? Bush?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brennan? 16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Please show PCS for House Bill 1441 reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Toledo.
Thank you so much.
Members, the next bill for consideration today is House Bill 327, Compensation of Retired or Former Members of the Commission on Offender Review by Representative Killebrew. Representative Killebrew, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. HB 327, Compensation of Former Members of the Commission on Offender Review. This is increasing retired former members of the Commission on Offender Review from $100 a day to $200 a day. They are responsible for selection of candidates who are appropriate for parole. They act as the administrative and investigative arm of the governor, cabinet, and board of clemency. The retired commissioners were called in last year over 50 times. There are approximately four retired commissioners. The $100 was introduced in the 40s. So there are no general appropriations tied to this bill because the temporary commissioners are paid out of an FCOR existing ops bill. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Rep. Killebrew. Members, are there questions on the bill? No questions on the bill. Are there amendments on the bill? See no amendments. Public testimony. Do we have public testimony on the bill? And we do. We have an appearance card from Mr. Eric Carr, Florida Commission on Offender Review, waves in support. Do we have any other public testimony? Mr. Barney Bishop, Smart Justice, waves in support. We'll fill out an appearance card. Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Okay, that concludes public testimony. Members, we're moving into debate on the bill. Do any members wish to debate on the bill? Okay, seeing no one. Representative Killebrew, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Having waived close, Lindsay, please call the roll on House Bill 327 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Chambliss? Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Please show House Bill 327 reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Killebrew.
Chair, thank you, committee.
At this point, I'm going to go ahead and pass the gavel back to Chair Brannon. Chair Brannon, the show is yours again.
Thank you, Vice Chair Roach, for handling that so efficiently. We'll now move on to PCS for HB 453, Officer and Firefighter Physical Examination Requirements and Records by Representative Duggan. You were recognized, Rep. Duggan, Chair Duggan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, under current law, if a police officer, law enforcement officer, corrections officer, or correctional probation officer, or firefighter becomes disabled by tuberculosis, heart disease, or hypertension, they are presumed to have contracted that in the line of duty. But to be eligible for that presumption, they must have submitted to a pre-employment physical exam that failed to reveal any evidence of the hypertension, the heart disease, or the tuberculosis. And Florida courts have held where there is no record of that pre-employment physical, the officer is not entitled to the presumption. Finally, while officers, law enforcement, corrections, probation, are required to undergo a pre-employment physical exam, firefighters are not. They are, however, required to undergo a medical exam prior to their initial certification as a firefighter. So with that background, the PCS does the following. It amends Florida law to require the employing agency of a law enforcement, correctional, or correctional probation officer to retain the records of a pre-employment physical examination for at least 5 years after the officer separates from the employing agency. And if they fail to do so, if the employing agency fails to maintain those records, the officer is entitled to the presumption that the disability is due to tuberculosis, heart disease, or hypertension is a compensable occupational disease under workers' compensation law. Finally, the PCS also authorizes that the medical examination that firefighters must take prior to their initial certification can serve as the pre-employment physical examination required under the statute in order to obtain the workers' comp presumption if that examination also did not indicate any evidence of those underlying diseases. That is the PCS.
Thank you, Chair Duggan. Are there any questions, members, on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, we do have an amendment, barcode PCS for HB 453A, like Apple One.
Thank you.
You're recognized to explain that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment creates the same records retention requirement for firefighters that I just explained for correctional officers. In other words, if they underwent the pre-employment examination, their employing agency must retain it for 5 years after separation, and if they fail to retain it, the officer is entitled to the presumption that their disability was the result of their occupation, and therefore it's compensable under workers' compensation law. So it harmonizes the treatment between the firefighters and the police officers in that respect. That's the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Duggan. Any questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing none. Any public testimony on the amendment? Seeing none. Are there any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing none. Chair Duggan, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I waive close.
Thank you, sir. If you favor adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
If you're opposed, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're now back on the bill as amended. Public testimony on the bill as amended. Lisa Henning, Florida State Fraternal Order of Police, Ways and Sport proponent of the bill. Rocco Salvatore, Florida Professional Firefighters. Ways and Sport, also a proponent. Stephen B. Slade, Florida PBA. Thank you, sir. Another proponent, Ways and Support. Anybody else wishing to speak on behalf of the bill? Don't see anybody. Any members wishing to debate? Costello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Being a firefighter for 30 years, you couldn't think I was going to let this one pass.
There you go.
Representative Duncan, I appreciate what you've done here. Have been in the fire service for over 30 years myself in the retirement things, and the dangers that these people face, both in law enforcement and in the firefighting services, are great. And I think this will help when the separation of service, when some of these things that you mentioned come upon them, there's documentation that says, look, it's presumed to happen on the job, and they and their families will be compensated accordingly. I much appreciate it. It cuts, like I say, it cuts a lot of red tape, a lot of stress. It makes the process, simplifies the process as it should be. So I just thank you for bringing it forward. I know the firefighters and police are very grateful for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Cosello. It's always good to hear from someone who has firsthand experience. We appreciate that. Anybody else in debate? Seeing none, Chair Duggan, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I could not improve upon my good friend, Mr. Cosello, so with that, I close.
Chair Duggan, having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll for PCS for HB 453 as amended. Announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Usada Cabrera? Yes. Bush?
Yes.
Cosello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson? Yes. Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show PCS for HB 453 reported favorably as amended.
Congratulations. Thank you.
We'll now move to HB 1297, driving over the speed limit, by Representative Bell, who I'm sure has never driven over the speed limit. You're recognized.
Good afternoon, Chair Brannon, Vice Chair Roach, and Ranking Member Grieco. I appreciate you allowing me to hear give this bill this afternoon. The statutory definition of reckless driving is any person who drives a vehicle in a willful or wanton disregard for the safety of persons or property. Florida case law holds that since the legislature has not chosen to include in statutes that exceeding a certain speed limit qualifies as reckless driving, law enforcement is prohibited from charging someone with reckless driving based on speed alone. I-4 has been designated as the most dangerous highway in the U.S. The Polk County Sheriff's Office routinely observes individuals driving in the excess of 110 miles per hour. House Bill 1297 expands the offense of reckless driving to include vehicles driving 40 miles over the speed limit, lawful or posted speed limit. And that is my bill, Chairman.
Thank you for that presentation, explanation. Does anyone have any questions for Representative Bell on her bill? Representative Thompson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, is this applicable to major highways as well as residential areas?
Yes.
Follow up.
Thank you. So, Representative, if I'm in a residential area where the speed limit is 35 and I'm driving 75, is that then reckless driving?
Recognize.
Yes, it would be.
Final.
Yes, ma'am.
And if I'm only driving 39 miles over the speed limit, is that not reckless driving?
Thank you, Chairman. It is considered, before it has not been in Florida statute, now we're including it. And so it doesn't have to specify 40 at all. If it's a 25 mile an hour, 20 mile per hour in a child area and you're driving 39, that you could be charged with reckless driving. But this just cleans up the bill. And in this, I brought a chart with me and it's just in Polk County from our sheriff, Grady Judd, gave this to me. And they calculated the speed limits just on I-4. We don't have residentials, but this is just Interstate 4. And the average speeding were like 114 and 70, 115, but then it also goes up to 154 miles per hour in a 70 mile hour. And so that would make it a felony.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions, members? Any other questions? I do see we have an amendment, amendment barcode 033617. You're recognized, Representative Bell, to explain this amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. This is a technical clarifying amendment just suggested by our staff.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Questions, public. Testimony on the amendment? Seeing none, any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing none there either. Representative Bell, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
I waive closed.
If you favor adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay. If you're opposed, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Now back on the bill as amended. Do you have any appearance cards? David Shep, Polk County Sheriff's Office. Thank you, sir. Proponent of the bill. Is that all? Okay. No one else? We are now back on debate on the bill as amended. Members, debate on the bill as amended. Seeing none, Rep. Bell, you're recognized to close on your bill as amended.
I waive close and ask for your favorable support.
Rep. Bell, having closed on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll and announce the vote on HB 1297.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera? Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson? Yes. Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brennan?
Yes.
15 yeas, one nay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Rep. Bell, congratulations. Show HB 1297 reported favorably.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We'll now move on to HB 7015-7015-OGSR/identity of a witness to murder by Representative Fetterhoff.
Thank you, Chair, for allowing me to present this bill. House Bill 7015 is a bill that saves from repeal the public records exemption for criminal intelligence information or criminal investigative information that reveals the personal identifying information of a witness to a murder for 2 years after the date on which the murder is observed by a witness, and that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fetterhoff, for that presentation. Are there any questions on the bill, members? Any questions on HB 7015? We don't see any. Are there any amendments? See none. Is there any public testimony on the bill? Jess M. McCarty, Miami-Dade County Executive Assistant County Attorney. A proponent of the bill waives in support. Angela, don't let me butcher her last name, Drezwicki. You don't owe me any apology. I owe you one. I'll do better next time. She weighs in support, of course. Thank you. All righty, no more public testimony. Anybody else? Okay. We'll move on to debate. Any members wishing to debate on the bill? Seeing none there either, Representative Fetterhoff, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I'll waive close.
Rep. Fetterhoff, having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll and announce the vote on HB 7015.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera? Yes. Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 7015 reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Federoff. All right. We'll now pass the gavel back to Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chairman. Okay, we are on the last bill for consideration today, which is PCB CRM 22-01, Time Limitations for Pre-Adjudicatory Juvenile Detention Care, presented by our own Chairman Brannon. Chair, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Roach. PCB CRM 22-01, let me give you a little background. Juvenile detention care is the temporary care of a child in secure or supervised release detention pending a court adjudication or disposition of his or her case. A child held in secure detention care is under the physical restriction of a secure detention center. A child on supervised release detention care is in the non-secure custody of a parent or guardian or under the supervision of the Department of Juvenile Justice. A court may require a child to comply with a condition of electronic monitoring under the supervision of DJJ staff while he or she is on supervised release detention care. Section 985.26 of the Florida statutes generally limits the amount of time a child can be held in any kind of detention care to 21 days unless an adjudicatory hearing has been commenced by the court. Upon a showing of good cause, the court may extend the length of detention care for an additional 9 days if the child is charged with a capital felony, a life felony, a first-degree felony, or a second-degree felony involving violence against any person. In many cases in Florida, it takes much longer than 21 days or sometimes even 30 days for a court to commence an adjudicatory hearing. As such, under current law, a child may remain unsupervised and not subject to DJJ monitoring for a significant period of time prior to the disposition of his or her delinquency case, even when a court finds such monitoring appropriate or necessary. The proposed committee bill revises the current 21-day time limitations in court proceduring on juvenile pre-adjudicatory detention care by authorizing a court to place a child on supervised release detention care for any time period until an adjudicatory hearing is commenced by the court. However, if a child has been on supervised release detention care for 75 days, the court must conduct a hearing within 15 days to determine the need for continued supervised release. Generally limiting a court from placing a child into secure detention care for more than 21 days unless the child is charged with a specified offense and the totality of the circumstances warrant an extension of secure detention care, in which case the court may extend the period of secure detention in up to 21-day increments instead of the current 9, after conducting a hearing to determine the need for continued secure detention care. However, if a child has been held in secure detention for 60 days or more, the court must prioritize the efficient disposition of his or her case. Revising the types of offenses a child must be alleged to have committed to be eligible for up to a 21-day extension of secure detention care to also include any second-degree felony and a third-degree felony involving violence against any person. Also, it is authorizing but not requiring a law enforcement agency to supervise any court-ordered electronic monitoring of a child on supervised release detention care. Local law enforcement agencies providing electronic monitoring may increase the availability of such programming, making more children eligible to be released on electronic monitoring rather than remaining in secure detention, and may reduce costs to the Department of Juvenile Justice. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Okay, thank you, Chair Brannon. Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Rep. Grieco, you are recognized. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing the bill. I think there's actually some really good things in this bill, but I have some questions as they apply specifically to extending the period of time of secure detention. And I wanted to first ask you, what is the rationale or what is the motivation to extend the period of time for secure detention and also to include a litany of lesser offenses that would qualify one for secure detention?
Thank you, Ranking Member. Chair Brannon, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I might clarify, you're talking about the including the second-degree felony and third-degree felony involving violence against persons?
Okay. Yes, sir.
My answer to that would probably be this. I'm trying to think of third-degree felonies. Maybe like a strangulation would be a third-degree felony on a family member. A felony battery involving great bodily harm or maybe personal disfigurement. Those are serious crimes, so we felt like that they need to be included. Also, I think it when you're dealing with victims, those types of cases take more time. In other words, if I steal commit a grand theft and steal a television from Walmart, you know, we've got the video, the witnesses usually are loss prevention people. But in these cases, I think you probably have sometimes many victims, many witnesses, family members. Also, if it's injury to people, you may have medical records that you have to run down. So I think all of that takes more time, and this would make for a more efficient system and then allow them to also have the option of being released on monitoring instead of always having to go back every 9 days and keep them locked up. You have that option. So I talked about a lot of different things. I don't know if that answered it appropriately, but I'll throw it back to you.
Good. Thank you, Ranking Member. Members, further questions on the bill? Further questions on the bill? Rep. Thompson, you are recognized for questions on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, it appears to me that now a hearing is expedited. And if you have a child, that child would go for a hearing within 21 days. And now it's being extended or could be extended to 75 days. And I know you've just said that some cases take more time, but it seems to me that we're tripling the amount of time. And why is that the case?
Thank you, Rep. Thompson. Rep. Chair Brannon, you are recognized.
The issue, I think, is oftentimes they're not being resolved in 21 days. And this will allow them to be released and then have up to and then, to have that monitoring. Or if we go back and ask for, instead of a 9-day, a 21-day extension, be a more efficient way and a more realistic time frame to take care of those type of circumstances. Remember I said if a child has been on supervised, if they do get on supervised release care for, I think it's 75 days, then we will have to have a hearing on that too, because that's a rather long time. But there's that safeguard put in there, and you must conduct that hearing within 15 days to determine the need for a continued supervised release, not secure detention, but supervised release.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I see that electronic monitoring is an option, and how would you determine when you should or should not release the child with electronic monitoring?
Chair, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That would be up to the judge. I mean, they'll have to, at the end of that 21 days, they'll have to have that hearing. The judge will decide whether they think they're a candidate for electronic monitoring. We think that that will be better than just, oftentimes they're just turned out to the custody of their mother or father or grandparents, and this will be a more efficient way. And then allowing the sheriff's offices or the police agencies the opportunity to do that also could save money. And as I said, it's just an option. If they don't want to do it, a particular county doesn't want to do it that way, it will fall back to DJJ to do it. But I think it opens up more opportunities to not keep so many juveniles in those cases locked up in secure custody and then have them out in a more safe manner where they can be monitored better than just checking on them and trusting the family to keep up with them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, further questions? Representative Bush, you are recognized.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, what other options do you have other than electronic monitors for the juveniles, if you really?
Chairman, you're recognized.
The bill does not change anything that's currently there. So the third option would be they still could be released, as I said, to the custody of the family. But the judge would have the other option of the electronic monitoring also if he felt that need be.
Members, any other questions? Seeing no amendments on the bill, we're going to move into public testimony on the bill. We have a number of appearance cards. First is State Attorney Phil Archer from the 18th Circuit, waves in support. Next is Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. Ms. Victoria Zepp, Florida Coalition for Children, you are recognized, Ms. Zepp. Wave in support, okay, thank you. Next we have Ms. Allie McNair, Florida Sheriff's Association. You are recognized, Ms. McNair. Waves in support, thank you. That concludes our public testimony in the bill. Members, any members wishing to debate on the bill? Ranking Member Grieco, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm gonna be down on the bill, and it's not because I'm down on everything in the bill. I like the expansion of options for juvenile judges short of secure detention. And I had the opportunity briefly to speak with the chair on this bill, but here are my concerns. And to remind everybody, I'm a criminal defense attorney, former prosecutor. I've been in the justice system now for in excess of 22 years. We're talking about, and to quote the sponsor and the chair, locking up children while they're being accused of a crime. Not convicted of a crime, not adjudicated of a crime. They're being accused of a crime, and these are children. These are 14, 15, 16-year-old children. And currently in law, unless it's a very serious case, there are options short of secure detention. We are now, with this bill, expanding the crimes in which one can be held in secure detention, not for 21 days, not for 30 days, but up to 60 days. So let me give you an example. Let's say a person of the age of 21 walks into a bar, gets into a bar fight, punches somebody in the face, and fractures their orbital bone. They can be arrested for felony battery. That is a third-degree felony, violence against another person. They will not sit in jail for more than a day. It is a bondable offense, as are all third-degree felonies, as are all second-degree felonies. It's a bondable offense. So if you're 21 years old and you get into a fight and break somebody's orbital, you get out the next day. But with this bill, if you're 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, you can be held in custody without any ability to get released for up to 60 days for an accusation. I have a serious problem with that. This is giving courts the opportunity to lock up kids for lower-level offenses for extended periods of time. We are going in the wrong direction when we're talking about juvenile justice and justice reform, and I have to be way down on this bill as a result of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ranking Member Grieco. Rep. Chambliss, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I still have a lot of questions that wouldn't have time to answer but I do support this bill. I support the intent of the bill because I feel that with the growing complexities, and I'm not a lawyer, by the way, I'm just a guy in the community, right? But with the growing complexities of the crimes that are committed by juveniles that I see in my neighborhood, maybe not everyone's neighborhood, but in my neighborhood, I think that we have to relook at statutes and we have to create more options to address those that diversity of crimes. Me personally, I'm more concerned about the way in which juveniles who are involved in violent crimes, how that is addressed. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the exact answer, but I think that this is the start in that conversation. The truth is, if you were to sit here and you were to tell me that, okay, your son, you know, he was involved in a stabbing. And, you know, we can hold him for a certain amount of days. But after that, we have to release him. And the boys down the street who were also involved in the stabbing know that, you know, little baby's coming home. If 30 days, yeah, keep him right there. Because that's the community where I live in, it has its own form of justice. And I think that we have to relook at that scenario and be realistic about the different options, alternative options that can be used in those cases. I look forward to working with the committee staff and working with my ranking member to get a lot of these questions answered, to kind of go through the different scenario and to see actually what's going on. But I do think that the options presented today make the statute much more applicable to a diverse range of scenarios, and that is why I'm supporting the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Chambliss. Representative Beltran, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for this good bill. Just to respond to some of the concerns that Ranking Member Grieco mentioned, we have a 21-day review provision in this bill. It's something that we don't have for adults who are held without bond for serious crimes because they're flight risk or risk of danger to the community and so forth. So this bill actually gives, in my opinion, more process to these younger offenders than the adults receive in the normal criminal justice system, which is, of course, how it should be. And these folks can be released if the judge determines that they can be released under supervision. And this doesn't do anything to impinge on speedy trial or anything else. And these are folks who are accused of serious crimes. And in some cases, they may need to be held. And for those serious cases, it may take a little bit longer to adjudicate those. So I'll be up on the bill. Thank you.
Representative Learned, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I'll be incredibly brief with this one. I think that the worst thing the government can do is take away somebody's liberty. And we're doing that with this bill to minors. And we're doing it before they get their chance in a courtroom. And I think what the ranking member said about going backwards on this bill taking us backwards in criminal justice reform is well said, because, you know, the government should have the burden of proof. The government should have to go to a courtroom and make its case. And if they can't do it in a timely manner, then let's make sure they do that. We are the body that can fund them so they can do their job and not put kids in a position where the government can take part of their life away. 2 months for a juvenile is an entire semester of school, which will have lifetime consequences, and we're doing it before they get their chance in court. So I'll be down on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Learned. Any other members wishing to debate? Seeing none. Chair Brannon, you have 45 minutes to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Roach. Thank you, Representative Chambliss. I do agree with you that more alternatives and more options is certainly a better look. And always remember, too, that they have to score detention according to the department's risk assessment. Of course, that takes into account, I believe, a lot of things: criminal history, the seriousness of the crime. They're higher risk usually in that category. So the department will do that risk assessment, and if they score high enough, then they score detention. So it's not like we're just willy-nilly, I don't like to use the word locking up people, but in this case it is, I guess. But as I said at the beginning, I think it gives us more options, more alternatives, and in the long run may give more young people a chance to be outside of secure detention. 21 days is not very long, and then when you tack onto that these 9-day extensions to deal with issues, like I said, with witnesses and all the things that come with the cases and dealing with them and the things that prosecutors are up against trying to run against that time clock, I think this is just a better scenario with better options, better alternatives, and that I'll close.
Thank you. Chair Brannon, having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on proposed committee bill CRM 22-01 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby has been excused. Beltran?
Yes.
Busata Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
No.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
14 yeas, 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Please show PCB CRM 22-01 reported favorably without a committee. At this time, I'm going to hand the gavel back over to Chair Brannon. Congratulations on your bill.
Thank you, Vice Chair Roach. Members, it looks like we have no other bills. I appreciate the back and forth today, the lively debate, and I appreciate the back and forth with Chair Roach and I, a lot of that, too. So thank you for being here. Representative Tuck, without objection, will you move that we rise? Seeing that, we're adjourned. Thank you.